licensing on both matters. I believe it is the desire of the court of both parties to proceed with sentencing on the murder conviction first. If I'm correct?
I believe you are correct.
Your Honor, I would note for the record that we have reviewed the pre-sentence investigation of report, including multiple letters that have been submitted by the family members of Bianca and Candace Cartagena. People have also received a statement submitted by the defendant's boyfriend, Jonathan Arena, regarding his position regarding what the defendant's sentence should be in this case. And finally, I would note that the people have reviewed the voluminous material submitted by the defendant herself that she believes relevant to today's sentencing. I would further note that the people have served a notice pursuant to criminal procedure law 380.50 indicating that Casey Croft, Mamarca, the aunt of Bianca and the sister of the defendant, is present today in court and wishes to address the court prior to sentencing. I would respectfully ask that Ms. Lamarck proceed with that statement now, and then afterwards I may make a few remarks regarding sentencing.
Okay. We'll invite her to come up and do that now.
Good afternoon, Your Honor.
Good
afternoon. My name is Casey LaMarca. I am Bianca's aunt. Your Honor, before I share our thoughts and feelings, I would like to start with a reading from Ecclesiastes. This reading reminds us that so much of what has happened is out of our hands. Ecclesiastes chapter 3, verses 1 through 8 reads, "There is a time for everything, and a season for every activity under the heavens. A time to be born, and a time to die. A time to plant and a time to uproot. A time to kill and a time to heal. A time to tear down and a time to build. A time to weep and a time to laugh. A time to mourn and a time to dance. A time to scatter stones and a time to gather them. A time to embrace and a time to refrain from embracing. A time to search and a time to give up. A time to keep and a time to throw away. A time to tear and a time to mend. A time to be silent and a time to speak. A time to love and a time to hate. A time for war and a time for peace." Verse 12 reads, "I know that there is nothing better for people than to be happy and to do good while they live." Verses 16 through 17, "And I saw something else under the sun. In the place of judgment, wickedness was there. In the place of justice, wickedness was there. I said to myself, God will bring into judgment both the righteous and the wicked, for there will be a time for every activity, a time to judge every deed." Your Honor, our family has struggled to prepare this statement time and time again. At times, the statement has been full of anger. At times, it's been full of sadness. And at other times, it's allowed us to enjoy happy memories and stories of Bianca and her life. But it has always been a painful reminder of the devastating loss and hurt we face every day. We as a family have experienced the loss of both Candace and Bianca. Most people live their lives thinking this could never happen to them. We too were once those people. There is no way to prepare yourself for something like this. We could never have imagined going through all that we have endured over the last 3.5 years. We could not have imagined the day in which fighting for what is right and just meant facing our own family member as the offender. More importantly, though, we would never have thought that our precious little Bianca's life would be taken so soon and in such a horrific manner. Your Honor, it was November 7, 2002, when Bianca came into this world. And from that day until the day she took her last breath, she brought overwhelming joy to all she met. She was loving, caring, funny, smart, inquisitive, compassionate, and kind. To those that knew her, she was not the decedent, the victim, or the patient, as she's most recently been referred to throughout this trial. She was Bianca. She was our granddaughter, niece, cousin, and great-granddaughter. She was a friend, a neighbor, a classmate, and a playmate. She was, is, and will forever be a beautiful little girl who is loved and missed by so many. Bianca's death has impacted the lives of everyone who knew her and our family. The emotional burden of Bianca's death is difficult for anyone to bear. We have all had to work through the guilt, sadness, anger, disappointment, and shame, and we continue to do so. Bianca's death has changed each and every one of us forever. We are no longer the people we once were. Joy has been redefined for us and is felt differently now, as nothing is as joyful and happy as it was with Bianca. Sorrow has been redefined for us, as nothing is as sad as losing her. Our relationships with each other and others have been strained and altered. We find ourselves avoiding gatherings and events as a way to avoid questions and pity. We no longer get enjoyment from activities we once enjoyed. We feel especially bad for Bianca's friends, neighbors, classmates, and playmates. When Bianca died, these children were just 7 or 8 years old. They didn't have a real understanding of loss or death. They were just innocent children. Their parents, teachers, and family struggled to find a way to tell them that Bianca had died, but they were not sure how or why. Now, more than 3.5 years later, these children are 10 and 11 years old and can understand what they see, hear, and read in the news, that Bianca died and her mother is responsible. How do these parents and families possibly explain the inexplicable to their children? Innocence has been lost for these children and their families as they try to find comfort and a way to cope with the reality of Bianca's death. For me personally, I've experienced what should have been some of the best and happiest times of my life during the past 3.5 years. On December 21st, 2012, just before midnight, Nick asked me to marry him. We were so happy and full of love. The next day, we got to call and tell our parents and families, who were all beyond happy and excited for us. The day after that, I was filled with sadness and just cried. Not because I wasn't happy, but because with that happiness came extreme sadness. I couldn't call my sister Candace and tell her about her engagement. I couldn't call or wake Bianca up to tell her. I know she would have been the most excited person of everyone. Bianca and Candace were not there for my bridal shower. They weren't there to help with all the planning and picking out dresses. All the stuff brides enjoy most lacked some enjoyment because one of my bridesmaids and my flower girl were always missing. Nick and I got married on April 26, 2014. Rather than watching Bianca get her hair and makeup done and walking behind her as she sprinkled flowers down the aisle, I attempted to fill that void with prayers and memorial candles. As a couple, we've always shared the dream and desire to have children and a family together. Yet I cannot convince myself that I deserve children because I failed so miserably in my promise to Bianca that I would never let anything happen to her. How do you convince yourself that it's okay to have children and that you'll be a good parent when you bear the guilt of letting something so awful happen to a child? The thought of something ever again happening to a child I love and care so much about is unbearable. I love Bianca like she was my own daughter. We had such a special relationship, just as she had with each person in her life. I gave up anything and everything to spend time with her and be there for her. I try to find some peace in knowing that Bianca knew and felt how much I loved her. She confirmed that during our last trip to Rushford together. As our family sat around the fire and she sat on my lap, she looked up at me, put her little hand on my cheek and said, "Can I just call you Mom?" In that moment, I was convinced that Bianca knew just how much I loved her, and yet my heart broke for her because she was feeling so distant from Candace. I watched my mother beat herself up and assume blame for Candace's actions and Bianca's death. My dad tries so hard to stand tall and protect us all when he himself is dying inside. It kills him that he, as our dad and protector, could not protect me from what we saw that night. Just as he feels the need to protect us, I feel the need to be the strong one for my younger sisters, brother, and cousins. They shouldn't have to go through this. Nobody should. From that devastating moment when we discovered Bianca's dead body in Candace's bed up until today,
Our determination and fight for justice has always been about Bianca. This has never been about our family or about punishing Candace. Yes, we spoke of and testified to her lying, cheating, stealing, and inappropriate behaviors, but she was not on trial for any of those things. She was on trial and convicted for the death of Bianca. That is what this investigation and trial have focused on, which Candace fails to accept. Candace recently did an interview with the Buffalo News. The interview was full of more lies and yet another version of Candace's story. As we read her words, we couldn't help but question her reason for doing the interview. She's had more than 3.5 years to come forward with information and tell her side of the story. Why now? Why to a complete stranger and not her family? The story of Bianca lying on her side facing Candace and accidentally being smothered by the pillow Candace has pressed up against her chest is so unbelievable. Bianca were laying on her side with her face pressed up against a pillow and found it hard to breathe. All she would have to do is roll over onto her back to take a breath. Candace's stories of taking pills and wanting to die have been shown to be lies. There's nothing in her system that would have hindered her consciousness or ability to recall details from the night of Bianca's death. The lies have got to stop. The stories have got to stop. This has gone on for too long. As we continue to read through her statements, we realize that the purpose for Candace's interview was mercy and escape from consequence, rather than accepting responsibility. She has never once accepted responsibility for what happened to Bianca. Candace indicated in her interview and letters that she would never have intentionally done anything to hurt Bianca. We wanted so badly to believe this, but her actions have told us differently. It was her behavior that brought us to the house the night we found Bianca, and her inaction upon the loss of her one and only child that landed us here today. Evidence is more powerful than lies. We have seen, heard, and learned of that evidence throughout the trial and are overwhelmed and disgusted by what has been brought to our attention. We have struggled to let go of the question, why? Why would Candace do such a thing? We know we will never have an answer to that question, and no answer provided would ever suffice. The intent behind Bianca's death is irrelevant to us. Intent does nothing to change the fact that Candace did nothing to help Bianca. Candace has written on multiple occasions that we all fail to remember the good things she did for Bianca and times when she made better choices and decisions in life. We have not forgotten any of this, but those things don't really matter when in the ultimate decision-making moment of her life, she made the wrong choice. Candace put her own wants, needs, and fears before Bianca's. She reported in her interview with the Buffalo News that she did not call our family because she was afraid that we would not believe that she did not hurt Bianca. She said that she didn't call for help because she was afraid that she would be accused of murder. When my father and I found Bianca in dire need of help that night, we never once hesitated to do what was right for Bianca. We never stopped to think about what would happen to us when police and first responders found us in a house with Bianca's dead body. It wasn't about us. It was solely about what Bianca needed. She needed help, but we were too late. Candace could have and should have called for help, but her thinking was self-centered. Unlike Bianca, Candace had a choice, and that choice carries consequences. My mother received a letter from Candace last Tuesday. It opened with, "Congratulations, you got exactly what you wanted. Your oldest daughter has been wrongfully convicted of murdering her own daughter, your granddaughter, and will likely spend the rest of her life in prison. Your Honor, we did not win or gain anything from the guilty verdict. Bianca is never coming back, and our family will never be repaired. Candace is so wrong in thinking that any of this is what we wanted or hoped for. The truth is that we sat and cried, and we talked about how bad we felt that there was nobody there to hug or console Candace after hearing the guilty verdict. We still feel bad that we cannot help her, but her choices and actions were criminal and therefore out of our hands. Growing up, we were taught that all actions and choices have consequences, sometimes good, sometimes bad, but we were always reminded to think long and hard before we chose to do something wrong or stupid. We are not sure what to say to convince you that Candace's actions warrant significant consequences. We as her family cannot possibly request or recommend a sentence as our heart breaks at the thought of our daughter, sister, granddaughter, niece, and cousin spending time in prison We would never wish for her to spend 25 or more years in prison. We cannot bear the thought of Candace sitting alone in a jail or prison cell. Every family gathering and event is a reminder that she will not be with us to celebrate birthdays, holidays, and special events. It tears us apart inside to know that our family will forever be broken. We would like to think that a limited time in prison, paired with some type of counseling to address the underlying issues, would bring about change and allow Candace the opportunity to once again be a productive and responsible member of society. However, there's no way to guarantee that. We ask you once again, though, to think of Bianca and all that she has lost. There's no sentence that will ever suffice for the loss of her innocent life. In the letter my mother received from Candace last Tuesday, she wrote, "How could you possibly love anyone who could, as you believe I did, intentionally smother an innocent, defenseless child and then continue to do so after they lost consciousness? Your Honor, we want Candace to know that our love for her has not changed. We are beyond disappointed and hurt by her actions, but that does not make us love her any less. We were never on a witch hunt to punish her for anything. We had to advocate for Bianca because she is not here to advocate for herself. My mom has always told us, I may not like what you do, but I will always love you. She continued to remind Candace of this in cards she sent to her in jail, but those cards were torn into pieces and sent back to my mother with Candace's letter. Our pain and guilt is something that cannot be experienced, understood, or conveyed by those that have not lived through this tragedy. We do not want to be sad when we think of Bianca, but it's so hard to get the horrific images of her laying defenselessly and helplessly in Candace's bed out of our minds. We hope that one day we will be able to just remember the good about Bianca and her life and not have to clear our minds first of those images. We hope that forgiveness will come with time and allow us to reestablish some sort of relationship with Candace. Your Honor, we thank you for allowing us the opportunity to share our thoughts and concerns. We hope you take these into consideration when you're making your decision."
Thank you.
I'm not going to stand here today and give any excuses or explanations. I'm not going to badmouth people that have hurt me and done, you know, cited things that I have done wrong, but I'm not also not going to admit to a crime that I did not commit. Being Bianca's mother is the best part of my life. She brought me such tremendous joy, happiness, and love. I love not just being a mom, but Bianca's mom. It will forever be the greatest part of my life. Nothing and no one can replace her. While Bianca may not physically be here with us, she is always in our hearts and our memories. I have so many amazing memories of Bianca in the need to come. From her jet black hair and sapphire blue eyes when she was born, to her pacifier known as her baby, to her Momo doll. We had Momo Momo everywhere, so Bianca would never be without him. When she was a toddler, we entered into the world as Wiggles. For those of you who don't know who those are, they're four men who entertain children. They're from Australia. Their names are Craig, Anthony, Murray, and Josh, along with Dorothy the Dinosaur, Wags the Dog, and Captain Feathersport. I still remember the words to those songs, watching the videos over and over, playing with Bianca, even going to the live performances for which my family went with us. It became a yearly tradition after that we actually would go to Disney on Ice each year. We'd get tickets right over the first or second row. I'd go, Bianca would call my mom and my sisters. It was so much fun. We all look forward to it every single year. I would sit there at the computer waiting for the tickets to go on sale. You know, we have a lot of family memories. You know, Bianca then went to pre-K at Educates. Met her teachers, Miss Kristen, Miss Paige, Miss Helena. From the start, she loved going to school. I specifically remember her graduation night. It was one of her first stepping stones. She looked so beautiful with her white cap and gown. They sang Itsy Bitsy Spider in Spanish, and then they showed it to all the children throughout their years, and it just brought tears to my eyes. I was so proud of her. I love Bianca with all my heart. I gave her flowers at the end. It was almost bigger than her. She was always so small. I imagine if she had grown up, she would have remained small like her grandmother on her father's side. Bianca was so excited on her first day of kindergarten, she could not wait to get on the school bus. We had her all ready, backpack, lunch. It was a tradition that we would wait in the driveway for the bus because it would stop at our corner and go around the circle, and she would be the last child on the circle to be picked up. And she loved it. It was something we looked forward to, and I did with her every morning. It was part of our lives. The dogs would be out there with us and everything. Bianca was always a very good student. She started in kindergarten. She started liking to read, and she would play school at home with her work and stuff. She started gymnastics, where she met her friend Madison, and they became very close over the years. Bianca and Madison played a lot together, whether it be at our home, Madison's home, or things that me and Madison's mother would take turns doing with the kids on their days off from school. She was one of the children of the neighborhood until she moved later on. The three aminos from our circle were Bianca, Mona, and Jenna. They were always together at school functions, birthday parties, and always playing. It always seemed like there was a play date going on at one of our houses. I loved having the kids at our house. We would do special crafts, and I'd always make sure they had a healthy snack and drink, and they would play dress up and play with their Bratz dolls and their Barbie dolls. It was just so much fun. So much fun. Another tradition my family and I implemented was on Halloweens. We would all gather in my driveway at my house and bring the fire cage and the patio furniture out. We would sit around the fire staying warm, handing out candy, while we would all take turns taking Bianca trick-or-treating with our friends. It was something we all looked forward to every year. Sometimes members of the family dressed up. You know, Bianca was several things throughout the years. She was Barney one year, she was Elmo, she was a mermaid, she was a punk rocker, and of course, Hannah Montana, because Hannah Montana ruled our world in Bianca's years, in those years. Birthday parties were based around Hannah Montana, and the girls loved it, something we always watched together. And what I am... This isn't about me, what I'm talking about right now, and I want to make that know these are my memories of Bianca. I have so little of her. I have a few photos, which if I don't mail to my attorney, I will never see again. That's all I have of her, and nothing else. I look at those photos every day, every single day, and one of them specifically is from a trip Bianca and I took to Niagara Falls, Canada. This is the best trip of my life. We stayed at the Marriott. We could see the falls from our hotel room. We did all the activities on Clifton Hill. We walked the falls. She wanted to ride the Skyline Tower, the elevator up over and over and over again. We had our picture taken there. We went to the Butterfly Conservatory. And then we finished the trip with a horse and carriage ride with a woman named Victoria and her horse princess. It was a magical weekend, and I just... best memories I have by far. About a month later, we actually went back with her cousin Chi-Chi and her dad, and we went to Marineland and stayed at the same hotel, went back to the Butterfly Conservatory in a can road, did the horse and carriage ride through the gardens. It was a great time. I was watching my little girl grow up. Greatest thing ever. I don't know how to explain to anybody that's never had children what it feels like to be and that pride you feel from their plays at school to their performance gymnastics to the second grade musical The Lion King that she put on. I couldn't be there, and I was so sad that I couldn't be there on opening night because at that time I was a single mom. But my mom was there that night, and we always made sure everybody was there for Bianca, and I went the very next morning. I wouldn't miss it for the world. Never missed a school event. I was always there. Love being part of her world, her education. It's what a mother does. It is what a mother does. I made some terrible choices going into Bianca's third grade year. I became selfish after my husband left, and I just wanted some attention for me for a change. I remember specifically one night after Ruben moved out, which was back probably in March or April of 2010. Bianca had started sleeping in my bed with me after that. She just wanted to always be close, and I loved it too. It was very comforting for both of us. And that's when we became best friends. I remember crying one night in bed because I was sad and our family falling apart. And I thought Bianca was asleep, but she wasn't. She reached out and she put her hand on my cheek and said, "Mommy, don't cry. Everything's going to be okay. Don't be sad. I love you." She seemed so grown up then, so grown up. I miss her so much. Sorry. I wish I could go back and not have missed the first day of school for third grade. I wish I had been there for a friendly brunch. I wish I could go back and erase everything so that I never missed any family time. I would never fly to them, it never would be the sea flood, I never would have hurt any of you. I'm sorry. I do accept responsibility fully for the things that I did do, the things that I've been guilty of. I'm missing the board events for being of lying, of stealing, of all of those things. I am guilty of those. I am, and I will forever never forgive myself for those things. Never. My family deserve better than that. They were there for me, and I value them, and I cherish them, and I still do. And it broke my heart to read my stepfather's pre-sentence report saying that they were afraid of me, that I would hurt one of them or possibly any future children. I would never hurt any of you. I've never harassed them, I've never stalked them, I've never bothered them since all of this happened. I only ever tried to reach out to possibly see if any form of a relationship could have been possible with them. I would never hurt them. And I, for my sisters and my brother, I want them to experience the joy of parenthood and having children of their own, and Bianca would want that for them too. It was the greatest joy of my life as being Bianca's mother, and I don't want my sisters or anybody to ever not be able to experience that. I don't know if I'll ever see my family, but I hope so. I am sorry for the things that I did, Your Honor. And I didn't speak to the Buffalo News looking for leanings or anything. I just wanted to be heard, and I was right. I wasn't believed then. I will never be believed in the future, and that's my own fault because of all the lies and things that I told. But I did tell the truth finally, and I understand people may not accept that. It may not change their opinions. I love my family. I love Bianca, and Bianca knows the truth. God knows the truth, and I know the truth. And I am at peace with that. I will go upstate to the prison, and I will try the best that I can to Bianca proud of me. And get what help you can get. There's not much available when it comes to mental health, but I've taken advantage of what they have here. And I will continue to bring some up there to try to deal with this tragedy that we've all been through. I love my family. I love Bianca. Thank you.
Mercifully, I don't have too much to say. Most of what I had to say, I set forth in my decision and verdict. I will note that I have read the pre-sentence investigation and all the submissions, both from the family and from yourself. It seems that you felt the need to fill in some blanks in the story of this case and to explain your less than exemplary behavior at or around the time of your daughter's death. Whether that was a good idea or not, I'm not so sure. But it did provide some insight to the court about you. A couple things that you mentioned that I think merit comment. You stressed that you had this terrible need for acceptance and approval. And that's what made you insecure. But ironically, it seems that you affirmatively went out of your way to alienate the very people whose attention and approval you needed the most, your family, your ex-husband, and your daughter. So I didn't quite understand what you hope to gain by behaving in that way. You suggested in hindsight that maybe Bianca died from an accidental overlay, claiming that you woke up from your attempted suicide on top of her. But although the doctors in the case disagreed on many things, one of the points that they all seemed to agree on, that this was not an accidental asphyxiation. It wasn't an accidental death. So I discount that theory entirely. You repeatedly said that you were the one who was supposed to die. And again, that what you were attempting to do was to kill yourself. And as I thought about that, I wondered who would do such a thing without giving serious thought to what effect it would have on their 8-year-old child to wake up and find their mother lying there next to her in bed, dead. How would you expect a child to get over something like that? And I think that does speak to the selfishness of your personality. And I don't think you'd necessarily disagree with that. But what really occurred to me was that if you were really serious about suicide, and I don't suggest for a minute that it's an easy thing to do, but if you were really serious about ending your own life because of the sad state of affairs that you found yourself in because you felt hopeless, it seems to me that if that's what you really meant to do, you would have done it without drama or fanfare, and certainly without involving the one person whom you claim to love the most. That was one of many reasons why I rejected this notion that it was accidental, or that by sheer coincidence, on the very day you decide to take your own life in your daughter's presence, she just up and dies from some previously undetected and asymptomatic heart condition. It just defies common sense. And as I said in my decision, that's primarily how I came to the conclusion that I did, notwithstanding the disagreement among experts about some of the details about the condition of your daughter's heart. Whenever I have a circumstantial evidence case, whether as judge or formerly as a prosecutor, I always thought about, what if I'm wrong? That's something that always bothers you. We are human, we are capable of making mistakes. All I can do is give my best assessment of the evidence as it was presented, and I stand by the conclusion that I reached. And if I am wrong, the appellate division will tell me so. So taking into account what I consider to be the relevant factors and my belief based upon the evidence that you asphyxiated your daughter, I will sentence you on the charge of murder in the second degree to an indeterminate term of imprisonment in a state correctional facility for 25 years to life. And on the other charge of offering a false instrument for filing in the first degree, Penal Law Section 175.35, I will sentence you concurrently to time served. There will be one surcharge of 350. 375 plus 50 plus 25, and I will advise that you have 30 days to appeal.